Hey everyone, this is James Wilson with MTB Strength Training Systems and BikeJames.com, and welcome to a special edition of the Bike James podcast. Today is definitely one of the more interesting podcasts that I've ever done. Never thought when I started doing podcasts quite a while ago that I would be doing one during a global pandemic and talking about ways that riders can keep themselves healthy, both now and also to look forward to the day when we are able to get back to normal and get back out on the trail and start riding again. You know, how are we, some tips for dealing with the current situation that we find ourselves in. And so I do want to say up front, like, I understand that there are some people who are going through some really tough times right now. And so this is not meant to, downplay what they're going through. I definitely hope that, everybody who's hearing this is healthy and safe. And if you're not, then I hope that, you're able to get the help and the situation turns out well for you. But again, I do believe that at the end of the day, we're going to get through this. And we're going to get to the other side, and on the other side, things may look different, but we're going to get there. And so what can we do, at least as mountain bikers, to look forward to that day? And again, one of the things is, besides social distancing, is maintaining your own health and maintaining your stress levels is also a very important thing that you can do right now to help not put any more strain on, what really is the problem. What we're finding out when we look at what is the problem is that we have a fragile medical system, and that the fragile, this system's busting at the seams in some areas already. They're operating at over 100% capacity as is. And so if they got any little influx, and I don't mean, again, to minimize the numbers there, but, it doesn't take much if you're already operating at over 100%. You see a 10, 20% increase over that, and the thing is going to break. And so we do need to do what we can to help not break our medical system. That is in the best interest of everyone. And so this whole, flatten the curve is the term, but at the end of the day, that's really what it's about, is like, we can't break our medical system and it's fragile. And so doing things, even if you're not necessarily, someone who's going to worry about the coronavirus getting you, if you start to let your own health slip and you start to let stress get to you too much, you don't manage your stress levels, it can manifest itself in other things that you may end up having to go to the doctor for, or can impact your health in negative ways. And so you doing everything that you can to be as healthy as you can and place as little stress on the medical system as possible is, again, along with social distancing and these other measures being put into place, one of the most important things that you can do. So again, the intention is to help people who are impacted by this just understand some of the best ways they can get through it from that perspective. So that's, really the intention of the podcast here. And so, right now I know that there's a lot of people who usually go to the gym, and, because of the gym closures in a lot of areas, you're not able to go to the gym. And so you're used to showing up, especially if you belong to some sort of, like, CrossFit, workout of the day type gym. You're used to showing up, you're used to having the workout made up for you ahead of time, you're used to having some coaches there to help coach you through it. And so it's a completely different thing than having to train at home. And so there's a lot of people who are looking for, like, good options for helping them to train at home. And so again, that's kind of like one group that I think is I'm hoping this podcast can help. And then the other group is the people who would usually be out riding and working on their more, mountain bike specific fitness and skills. And so, even if you usually do work out at home, you may have had like a skills camp scheduled that you're not able to make, or you're not, able to, get out and ride as much or work on your skills as much. And so, there may be some things that are impacting your ability to work on those more mountain bike specific fitness and movement components. And so what can you do to, again, with what you have, what can you do with that to make the most of the situation? And, you know, that's, you know, one of the things I tell clients that I work with is, you know, there's optimal and then there's reality, right? Like if there's never been a more stark contrast between those two things, I think, than there is right now. And so, you know, your job is to optimize your reality. You know, you can't get caught up in what is optimal and what you're not able to do. You have to look at, like, what is the reality of my situation? And then what can I do with that? And that's been really the secret to success with training and really anything in life from the beginning of time. But it's never more important than now for people to understand that, because there's just way more, you know, that you can't control. And so what we used to think of as optimal is just not achievable at this moment. And so how do you, you know, make the most of what you have while not driving yourself crazy in the process, you know, just from all the unknowns and worrying about what you're not doing and stuff like that. So based on, you know, with all that, I wanted to give my top three tips for training during the coronavirus pandemic. And again, the idea is to help you stay strong for both, you know, the trail and for life. And again, it's super important that you stay strong for, you know, for both of those. But again, that life side of it is super important. And so, you know, with that, again, like my, these tips come from a, a riding for a lifetime perspective. And, you know, what that means is that this isn't about racing next season. And, you know, a lot of the, again, just my tips in general really come from this. I'd recorded a podcast a couple weekends ago that was really going to come out today, but given just the situation since then, I wanted to get these tips out, and I'm going to release that podcast here in the next week or two. But it is my tips for riding for a lifetime. And again, just looking at this concept, because riding to maximize or training to maximize your performance and training to ride for a lifetime are not necessarily the same thing. There'll be a lot of overlap, but they're not the same goal. And so you will make decisions if your goal is okay, well, I need to ride as fast as I can next season. Then you may make decisions a little bit differently than you would if you're looking at, I need to do this not only next season, but I really want to do this for like the next 10 years as well. And, you know, or more, right? Like no one wants to give up riding because of age and injuries and just, you know, your decrease in performance. So riding's not fun anymore. So how do you do this for a lifetime as opposed to, you know, I need to train to get, you know, fit to race next season. And so those are two different goals. And again, it's not that you won't improve your performance, you'll definitely improve your performance. And the dirty little secret is that longevity is really the best thing you can do, right? Like I do a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, and the saying is, you know, a black belt is just a white belt who didn't quit, right? Like you didn't have to be some natural talent, some great, stud on the mat to be a black belt. You didn't have to start off. Like you just had to not quit. Like you could have started off as like one of the worst people in your class, but over the course of 10 plus years of training and doing it, if you're able to do it consistently, like you can't help but get better. And so again, people can prove me wrong on that. Like I don't make absolutes, because I always realize someone's going to try and prove me wrong with that. But for the most part, if you have some sort of focused training and you're putting in good, consistent effort, you will improve. And so your ability to maintain that consistency is one of the best performance enhancing things you can do. If you're constantly having to take time off for little injuries and things like that, because you're walking that real fine line between, you know, performance enhancement and injury, right? Like they are next door neighbors, and it's really tough to keep them separated sometimes. And so if you're going to step over that line quite a bit from time to time, if your goal is to improve performance, it's just part of the game. And again, if you're getting paid based on that, then great. Like that can be your goal. But anyway, I'm sorry, I'm kind of getting off on a little side note. But the point is that these goals, these suggestions really come from that bigger perspective which you know, again, I hope you can appreciate. And just you know, if you're looking for some other tips on that, I'm sure they're out there, but that's kind of where I'm coming at this from. So so here are my top three tips for training during the coronavirus pandemic here. Number one, and this is a personal tip that really hit home for me, is try to maintain your routine as much as possible. And a big part of this is to keep your normal training times. And you know what I mean by that is that if I assume that you have some sort of training and or riding schedule. So there are, you know, periods of time blocked off during your week that you already have blocked off to train and or ride. Now, right now, you know, we're getting knocked out of our normal routine. And so it's really easy to just get knocked out of the complete normal routine, right? Like if you're used to going to a gym to work out and you can't go into the gym, well, it's real easy to spend a day, 2-3 days, all of a sudden it's a week or 2 weeks, and you haven't really started a new routine. You're still not working out. You're still not doing anything. You may have the intentions of doing it, right? But that's not the same as, you know, taking action on it. And so the important thing is to try to maintain those appointments that you already have with yourself to train or ride as much as possible. Again, you know, if you're having to rearrange your schedule because of things, then that's a different thing. But if you're able to maintain, you know, some or all of your normal training and riding times, then you should do that and fill it with something. It should be, so if you're, you know, again, the easiest thing, if you're used to going to the gym to work out, is to find some sort of at-home workout solution, which I'll touch on some options, you know, here in a minute. But the other thing is, if you're used to riding a lot, if you're getting out and riding, that, you know, maybe, again, it depends on how much time you're getting out and riding, but the average rider is getting out a few times a week for an hour or 2 hours at a time, you know, and so you can still use that time to and fill it with something riding related. And it may be like more mobility, right? Like, again, I'll touch on it here in a minute, but one of the things that you can do with this time is actually work on the movement behind the technical skills on the bike. And so you can, you know, if you haven't ever done yoga before, like might be a good time to, you know, Ryan Leach has some good stuff and is a fellow mountain biker. You can find all sorts of free stuff on YouTube. So instead of going for a ride for an hour, find an hour long yoga video that you can follow. So you need to still keep your training times, keep the commitment to yourself, because, you know, one, it's, you don't want to just completely fall out of everything, right? Like, just because a lot of the routine is getting disrupted doesn't mean that all the routine has to get disrupted. And it's also good for your sanity. I mean, just to be honest with you, it'll help you maintain some sense of normalty and control if you're able to just maintain your training schedule on some level. And again, this was, you know, something I realized myself, because like I said, it's really easy to, you know, to kind of stop doing what your normal training routine is. And all of a sudden I realized, like, holy crap, it's been about a week and I've just been like really spotty with my routine. And it's because I'd kind of let my entire routine, my life routine, had gotten disrupted. And so it's real easy to just let it all. Like I said, it was a personal realization that I realized that a lot of people might benefit from as well, is that, you know, keep that commitment to yourself. You already have that time blocked off. You are going to commit it towards bettering yourself in a way that was going to help your riding. And so you can still find ways to do that with that time. And it'll help you in a lot of different ways, if you do that. So that's my number one tip. My second tip is that, again, if you're needing to outfit a home gym, there's a lot of people who find themselves, you know, having to work out at home, but they don't have a lot of money. And you know, outfitting a home gym in general is, you know, you got to save up for it, invest in some equipment over time, you know, especially if you find yourself like not really sure what's happening with your income at the moment, and you definitely don't have a lot of money to spend, you know, what can you do? So you can't buy a whole lot of kettlebells, you can't buy a bunch of dumbbells, you can't, invest in much at all. And so what can you do? And so my recommendation is the isometrics. You can do body weight. I mean, obviously body weight training is always accessible, but body weight training starts to get a little limiting, I like lifting weights, like having a challenge of creating more tension is good. And so, and again, also the moving your body and then moving against an external load, those are two different skills. You want to have them both. And so, again, there's a lot of good reasons that if you can, right, like then you can to add some other stuff in besides just body weight training. And again, if you can, if you're stuck, I did a post last week with a free download of my No Gym, No Problem body weight training program and a couple other, I think, with the mobility program and the 15-minute trail rider tune-ups. But again, just recognizing that there's a lot of people who need some solutions for, like, what do I do now? I'm used to going to the gym and having someone tell me what to do, and or having a gym where I have a workout, but I need all of this equipment to do it. And now I don't have access to that equipment. What do I do? And again, like I said, body weight's good. If you need that, you can actually download that program for free right now at bikejames.com. I think if you do a search for coronavirus, it'll be one of the few posts that pop up. Hopefully, a few posts. We'll be through this soon. But the point is, if you're going to try to add something else, then one of the things that I think works incredibly well is isometric training and also using strength bands. And strength bands are something that I was going to start talking about more and doing more videos on in general. And it really comes at a good time now, because the strength bands, what I'm talking about, are those big giant rubber band looking things. And a lot of people think of them as pull up assist bands. Like, that's what you'll find them if you do a search on Google, pull up assist bands. You also see powerlifters using them. They'll put them around the barbell when they're doing squats and benches and deadlifts. And so it's these big rubber band things are they have a lot of different good applications, and the way that people are using them is good, but they kind of get dismissed a little bit as far as their ability to build functional strength for us as mountain bikers. And, you know, I think a lot of it just has to do with the visuals of it, right? Like, I joke around with people. It's just, you know, doing a heavy deadlift, right? Like deadlifting 200-300 pounds and then rah, and dropping it to the floor and hearing it bang. I mean, there's just something primal about that. It's 300 pounds and it looks impressive to other people. And then you take like a really heavy band that's also applying, you know, like 300 pounds worth of force or even more at the top of the position. And so your body's being placed under very similar tension demands. But it's just a band, right? Like it just doesn't look as impressive as picking up a bunch of weight. And so I do think that bands suffer a little bit from that visual. They just don't look like as impressive as lifting weights. They also suffer a little bit from a past where they have been seen as, you know, slimming and toning tools, right? Like that was, if you went into the weight room and you know, that like that's you use free weights. And the bands are what you see in the group exercise rooms. And, you know, even like the, you know, you see the bands with the handles and stuff and, you know, any sort of bands. You have like rubber tubing that they use and the rubber sheets that you'll see in like therapy. So, you know, there's a lot of different specific uses for, you know, bands and the technology, for lack of a better term. But my point is that I think that bands have just gotten a little bit of a bad rap over time because, like I said, they've been they just don't look as impressive, and they're usually seen as something that you're going to use as like a slimming and toning type thing, and they're just not as really as hardcore and building strength and stuff that you need, as well as free weights and kettlebells and stuff will. And I think that that's just super unfortunate. I think that they're actually super valuable for us as riders. And one of the best things is that they're not very expensive. So you can get a set of four bands And, you know, again, I'm not sure, you know, when the podcast comes out, you could find them on Amazon by doing a search for pull-up assist band set of four. I'm sure if you do a Google search for that, you'll find other sites that are selling it besides Amazon if Amazon's not shipping them out or whatever. I know they're putting some limits on what they're doing besides with non-essential items. And I don't think you'll be able to convince them that your bands are essential items if they decide that they're not. But my point is, I'm pretty sure someone out there is selling strength bands, the pull-up assist band, set of four. They're not very expensive for how many uses and all the things that you're going to be able to do with them. And so, I mean, I'm talking like less than $50 for a set of four. Again, you may have to, you know, look around and invest a little bit more depending upon what the supply is like at the moment. But you're still looking at much less than what you would be spending to get a couple kettlebells or a few dumbbells, or, you know, an Olympic bar and weights. Like, you're spending far less and you're going to have way more variety as far as exercises and also loading options with the bands as well. And plus, I think that they are in some ways even more specific for us as mountain bikers than free weights are. And the reason that I say that, there's a couple of reasons that makes them, you know, really interesting for us. And one is actually a study that I came across where they were comparing bands to regular free weight training. And they were looking at, you know, strength and power gains. And what they found was that bands produced similar strength gains. They produced power gains. They didn't produce as much peak power as the bands or as the free weights did, but the what they did do is they had a greater stabilization factor. And so that was the reason that you saw less peak power, because the body has to stabilize the bands. And if you've ever like lifted with bands, like grabbed a band and tried to, you know, stepped on it and tried to do like an overhead press, or, you know, if you've ever messed around with like a band and tried to lift it, it's like, it's surprisingly hard. It's definitely different than a weight. Like, you are having to wrestle with something that has its own like, you know, center point. And so, like, you know, with a free weight, like, you're grabbing this, you know, the whole thing and moving the whole thing. With a band, like, it has a fixed point and you're pulling against that. So there's a completely different you know, need to stabilize with that. And so that stabilization factor, and also they found that it increased strength without increasing weight. And so the theory was that was because the strength gains were from neurological adaptations as opposed to targeting more of the muscle tissue. And so again, as mountain bikers, we're wanting to improve our strength to weight ratio. And so if bands improve your strength in a similar way to free weights, you know, kettlebells, dumbbells, barbells, but they don't add any weight while you do put on a little bit of weight while lifting with free weights, then they actually win when it comes to the strength to weight ratio game. And for us as mountain bikers, that's the game that you're trying to play. And so again, if you're trying to put on some muscle, because you know, having some armor, you don't want to like get too skinny. You need something, an engine to produce power. You need some armor for when you hit the ground. But at a certain point, you reach like you're a good weight for you. And then you want to continue to try to improve your functional fitness without improving your weight. And again, if you can improve your strength and power without adding weight, well, that's what that's the ultimate goal as an athlete at any level. So again, the bands seem to do that on some level better than free weight training does. And they also give us that stabilization factor that we need on the bike as well. Like, we're not in a stable environment just looking to produce peak power. We're in a very unstable environment looking to produce power, right? We still need power, but it's an unstable environment compared to like an Olympic lifter or a power lifter or someone who's lifting, you know, again, like, none of these athletes are lifting with their feet on a rotating platform, right? Even clipless pedals are a rotating platform. They rotate on you. And so the point is that the stabilization factor is much greater on a bike than it is in the weight room. And so having a tool like bands that allow you to target that stabilization factor as well, again, could have some benefits for us over free weights. So you may not actually even be like taking a step back or like kind of, I guess, making a compromise if you do end up using strength bands for your training. Because again, you can do, you know, deadlifts, presses, rows, pull downs, almost any exercise that you can think of that you can do with bands. And the other cool thing is you can also create lines of pull that you can't with free weights. Like free weights are up and down, right? Like because gravity is what is affecting it. And so the line of pull is up and down. If you let go of a free weight, it's falling straight down. You're lifting it up against it and it goes back, and gravity's pulling it back down or pushing it, depending upon your current view of physics, or quantum physics, whatever the hell it is. But anyway, so point is that with bands, you know, you can fix them to a wall. Like you can get an attachment, you know, in your garage. Like it's easy to get a little hook, make sure you put it in a stud, and attach a band to the wall, or they have the little loop things that are actually specifically for band stuff. I mean, even like TRXs and suspension trainers come with things that you can hang in a door and give you something to hook onto or loop a band through. And so you can create unique lines of pull. And so again, one of the cool things with bands is that, and for example, like as riders, we're wanting to project energy with our hips forward and backwards, as well as up and down. We actually do more forward and backwards than up and down. And so when you're doing lifting weights, you're practicing up and down. Again, that line of pull, the resistance is up and down. But you can put a band and attach it to, you know, the door or whatever attachment that you have, and then wrap it around your hips, and then do a hip hinge, a deadlift movement with the band there. And now your hips are having to learn how to create and tension in that plane forward and backwards. And so you can train a more specific hip movement that way as well, by using bands. And, you know, of course, incorporating all the tools is the best. But I guess my point is that if you're in a situation where you're looking for home gym training options and you're wanting to do more than just body weight training, that bands are a great, great option. And I'm going to be doing a lot of videos and stuff on band training here in the next few weeks, again, to kind of help riders with that. Something, again, like I said, I'd intended to do because it's something I've been doing with my own riding for quite a while. In fact, I did a video on the banded Zerker deadlift a week or two ago that is one of my favorite hip hinge exercises that I do now. I think it's great for riders, even if you have access to kettlebells and dumbbells and all those things, which I do, and I still like to use this exercise because of the band. And you know, there's just so many good things that you can get from it. So anyways, the bands are great. And the other one is isometrics. And I've done a whole podcast on isometric training and the benefits of it and why it gets misunderstood. But I'll just say that isometrics are a hugely important part of being a good mountain biker, because it's your ability to create tension create and fuel tension in an efficient way is at the heart of what we do, right? Like when we get put in high tension situations, if we're not able to create and maintain that, you know, good position, good breathing, good posture, all of those things, then we're going to fatigue much faster. And so the isometric training is great for not only improving strength, because the basis of strength is tension, right? How much tension can you create in a muscle? Is and then how well can you apply that tension towards a specific movement, right? Like those are two different things. And so you're, by trying to train the skill of creating tension through the skill of creating movement, it's not the most efficient way to do it. You can do it, but it's not the most efficient way to do it. And so isometric training is also very safe. The odds of getting hurt doing it are much less. So instead of, you know, doing heavy deadlifts, you're doing, you know, isometric hinge movements, and you're able to place the body under just as much, if not more, tension than you would lifting weights, but you're doing it in a way that does not place you in a where your injury potential is there. Like everybody knows, right? Like if you want to get strong, I think I originated the 2 to 2.5 times body weight deadlift recommendation for mountain bikers. And so I know about, you know, trying to improve strength through movement-based training, but I also know from personal experience that as you get heavier and heavier and you keep having to increase the weight to improve the, or, you know, to keep increasing your quote unquote strength, then your injury potential goes up and the chance for hurting yourself in the gym goes up. And that's not what you want. And so, especially as you get stronger, using isometrics to work on the strength, right? Just the raw tension creation ability of a muscle, your ability to maintain good posture, and your ability to maintain good breathing while doing that. Like, those are specific skills that are the foundation for movement skills. Like, you know, movement requires tension, right? But it needs tension. Everything starts with tension. You can have tension without movement. That's what isometrics are. So we get enamored by movement, thinking that movement equals tension, but it's not. Or movement's what we're after, but we're not after movement. We're after tension. And we're after tension to create movement in a very specific way, but we want tension. And so we need to train those tension skills in on their own. And so isometrics are, again, a great way to do that. And again, you can use, there's good body weight isometrics that you can do. The bands are great for isometrics. I'm going to be releasing some stuff on using bands for isometric training. And also just using something as simple as a large towel or, you know, a jiu-jitsu belt is what I recommend to a lot of people. If you have a forearm forklift, those are pretty common, you know, that you can use them to move heavy furniture and appliances and stuff like that. The orange nylon things with the loops you can put your forearms through. Those are good for training, doing different isometric stuff. And so it's a very inexpensive to do and super effective. And so combining isometric training with band training and then also body weight training, like those three things will allow you to really, I don't feel like you'd be compromising much at all compared to someone who had a bunch of kettlebells and dumbbells and like a fully equipped gym. Like, yeah, there's some things that you could do and it'd be nice to have all those some different equipment for doing different things. But really, when it comes to results, when it comes to like how it's actually going to improve your functional fitness and your ability to ride and also just be strong for life, you're not going to be compromising anything. And so, in fact, I would argue that you may be better off than someone who has all that equipment and isn't using band training and isn't using isometrics. Like, if you gave me a choice that I could only do those two things or I could only do, like, you know, movement-based stuff with kettlebells and dumbbells and barbells, I could have a fully equipped, you know, top-of-the-line gym with all the best equipment in the world, but I was not allowed to do isometrics and we were not going to have any bands in there. Or I could have just bands and just isometrics. I'd take the bands and isometrics, like, every day of the week. Like, I wouldn't even, like, think twice about it. So those two things are, like, foundational parts of a program. So I guess my point is that you can equip a gym very inexpensively, but also have it be very effective. You don't have to feel like you're missing out if you're not able to spend a bunch of money on a bunch of equipment and stuff. So anyways, hopefully that helps some people. And then also, so this, the third tip that I have is kind of directed for the people who were, you know, counting on using time to help improve their bike specific movement and fitness and skills and stuff like that. And so the I guess like what you can do if you're not able to get out and ride. So, you know, if you're planning on you had like a skills camp or something coming up, or you usually get to get out and ride and that's just kind of been disrupted and you're not able to get on the trail and work on your skills as much. You know, there's definitely some things you can do, like drilling is good, kind of. I did a video that had a post on bikejames.com not too long ago on why drilling for muscle memory is actually a bad thing. So I don't want to go into that like too much here, but like drilling has a purpose, but I think it gets overplayed in the mountain bike skills training community. I think it gets misused and misunderstood a lot. And so so you can definitely do that and have that be part of it, but you may actually look at this as a chance, like what, you know, a positive, if you will, as a chance to take a step back and work on your movement behind the technical skills on the bike. You know, this message has been at the heart of MTB Strength Training Systems for a long, long time. And that is that you don't, you know, you're not going to change your ability to ride better if you're not also able to improve your ability to move better. And, you know, behind every technical skill on the bike is a movement skill that you need to do off of the bike. And so that's one of the reasons that I work so hard to help people understand how the movements that you're doing in the gym and with your mobility connect to what you're doing on the bike. And so, you know, the most basic example is your hip hinge, your deadlift movement. And you can look at that as your ability to get down into your attack position. Basically, go through the range of motion on your cockpit to go from tall to super low. And how efficiently and how well can you do that? And that's one of the fundamental foundational skills for mountain biking. But at the heart of that is your hip hinge. So if you have trouble doing a good hip hinge off of the bike, if you get off the bike and you try to do a hip hinge and you're struggling with it, guaranteed you're having trouble applying it to the bike. Like, there's no way that you're getting on the bike and then suddenly you're magically moving better. Like, that's just not how it works. Like, if anything, you're moving worse because you put your body in this foreign environment that it's having to learn how to move in. And so if you don't have good movement skills in the first place and you're trying to learn technical skills on the bike, you're doing it backwards, and you may actually be learning bad habits that will set you up for making it harder to progress down the road. Because again, it's not that hard to give somebody who doesn't know anything a few tips that'll help them get through some parking lot drills better, you know, help them get through some corners on a trail that, you know, the coach is there like helping you with. That's not that hard. But what's hard is to give somebody the fundamental things that they need to take from there that's going to help them continue to progress and not hit a wall because of the they don't move well. And so without that ability to move well, they're just going to hit this wall, and then you end up with a lot of I feel there's a lot of coaching out there that is really a matter of helping people overcome these movement dysfunctions as opposed to teaching actually good riding skills. And so, again, if you're trying to teach somebody how to get in a good body position and they can't get into a good hip hinge off of the bike, well, you're going to do all sorts of things to try to help them, like tell them to drop their heels, right? Like, dropping your heels will help shift your weight back, but it's because it creates an unbalanced foot position that will move your hips back. Like, your heels should drop because you shift your hips back. Your hips shouldn't shift back because your heels drop, right? But they can look very similar, but they're not the same. Like, the way that your body got into position, the balance points, your ability to move from those positions are two completely, completely, completely different things. But you get these things like, you know, drop your heels to sit your weight back. And it's like, no, like, that's what you tell someone who doesn't have a good hip hinge. Like, if you have a good hip hinge and you can slide your hips back and forth with balanced feet, you shouldn't have to drop your heels to get your weight back, right? You should be able to slide your hips back. And as your hips slide back, your weight shifts back. And as your weight shifts back, your heels drop, right? It's the two completely different ways to get in that position. And so, but it all stems from your ability to move well, right? Like, another one is lean your bike and not your body. Like, that is absolute nonsense, right? Like, you have to lean your body in order to to corner your bike properly. You need to lean both, right? And so, but the problem is a lot of people can't perform the corkscrewing movement that is at the heart of cornering. Again, I've done a ton of posts on bikejames.com about the stick windmill and its application to cornering and riding your bike. And that is that corkscrew movement that you need to know how to do and do in a balanced way if you want to be able to lean your body properly on the bike. Now, if you get someone who doesn't know how to lean their body properly and they try to lean their body, they're going to wreck. Like, it's not going to be pretty. And so, well, how do you keep that from happening? Well, you tell them, don't lean your body, right? Don't lean your body. You need to lean your bike. And but that's not it. Like, that's not fixing the problem. That's not helping somebody actually fix the movement problem behind the skill problem. That's giving them a technical solution to a movement dysfunction. There's a huge difference between, you know, giving someone like, you know, good riding skill advice and giving them some sort of solution to a movement dysfunction. And like I said, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff that you see out there in the skills training world kind of stems from a lot of riders not being able to move well, people not knowing how to fix that movement and help them with that. And then, you know, creating false expectations for what kind of results that you can expect from your camper experience with them. Because how do they know what you can expect if you don't know how they move beforehand, right? And so you come up with ways to help people in this environment, and it's not necessarily actually helping create better skilled riders. Is the thing. And you end up with a lot of frustrated riders who feel like they're doing the right thing, they're following the advice, and it's still not working consistently. And at the heart of that, honestly, is movement skills. And so your ability to move is at the heart of that. So again, like I mentioned earlier, like if you usually go out and ride, like keep riding or keep that time, but maybe do, like I said, like yoga or mobility, or I'm actually going to be coming out with a, here in the next week or two, some like movement drills that are specific to the technical skills on the bike. So something that kind of helps to bridge that gap between the gym and the bike. Like, okay, we're going to do movements in the gym where we're not really worried about trying to mimic how we're riding. We're not really worried about trying to, you know, completely mimic that stuff. But then we want to, and then we try to get on the bike and then apply it to the technical movements of riding a bike, you know, the specific movements of riding a bike, and it can be tough sometimes. And so these solo drills, these bodyweight drills will kind of, you know, can kind of help bridge that gap. And again, something I'm working on, you know, that'll hopefully kind of help out with this, you know, people that need a solution for this. But even if not, like, just a good mobility program will do wonders, right? Like, instead of stressing out trying to train more and figure out how do I keep up, you know, all this like riding and stuff that I would be doing, like maybe you let your body recover and you work on mobility and you actually get back on your bike and you're able to move better and you find like, oh man, like somehow I move more efficiently, so I'm not as tired. Like, you'd be surprised. Like, efficiency of movement is a huge factor when it comes to endurance, right? Everybody's worried about VO2 max, but VO2 max gets way overplayed. You see athletes, as they age, their VO2 max declines, but their performance continues to improve, right? So if VO2 max was the important thing, that wouldn't happen. Like, VO2 max is connected to it, but what happens is movement efficiency is the top thing. The more efficiently you move, the better your endurance is going to be. Again, all other things being equal. But so these things are all factors, but which one's more important, movement efficiency or VO2 max? Well, it's obviously movement efficiency is the most important thing when it comes to cardio training and your ability to the specific endurance of your sport. And so, the better you move, it'll also help that as well. So I guess, like, don't stress out and try to figure out how do I maintain my riding and all this other stuff. Like, man, just use this time to let your body get some good mobility. And this is something that a lot of riders have not really done, right? They came into riding and they were already kind of tight and didn't move well. And then riding makes you tight and has its own things. I love riding mountain bikes, but man, there are definitely postures and positions that it uses over and over and over again that start to create stiffness and tightness in certain areas. And so you have to do things to address that. And unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize it until it's too late. They're like, oh man, this hurts, or this, you know, okay, well now you need to start working on this. And you got to kind of get back up that hill. You didn't even realize that you were, you know, creating this hill for yourself to climb back up. And you turn back around and you're like, you know, dope, you know, the old Homer Simpson moment. And you got to get back up that. But then that's even harder if you're still having to train and ride as much while you're doing that and making that effort. And so this may be a good time to spend the next month or two just focused on moving better, mobility. Don't stress out about the high intensity, you know, riding stuff. You can't mimic trail riding, okay? You can't. Like, there's nothing you're going to do that's going to replace trail riding. And so if you can't do it, like, don't stress out. Like, find other ways. Movement efficiency is one of the best things you can do for that. And just a little kind of like bonus tip that ties into this as well is that, you know, don't make up for a lack of trail rides with a lot of, I guess, like, you know, again, like CrossFit style, high intensity, strength training type stuff. You know, the I can see where the logic is, right? Like a trail ride is hard and those kind of workouts are hard. And you end the workout breathing hard and sweaty, and that's just how you feel after a trail ride. So it must be, you know, specific to it. And so if I can't get out on the trail and ride as much, well, I can do more of these kind of workouts, and that'll help kind of bridge that gap. That's actually one of the worst things that you can do. Do not fall for that. Like, again, the best cardio you can do is on a bike. So if you have access to one, then use it. Either if you're still able to get out and ride, then do that. If you're able to ride indoors, then do that. You know, otherwise, don't panic and start using strength and power training as cardio training, right? Because that type of training has a higher chance of getting you hurt. And you also, you have a higher chance of getting you back on the trail with bad movement habits and overuse injuries waiting to happen. And so don't make that mistake, right? So again, like, relax. Do what you can, I think the best thing that the vast majority of people listening to this could do is to focus on your movement efficiency and your mobility and really spend a chunk of time working on that, and just kind of let this, hey man, if we're not going to be able to ride our bikes, we're not going to be able to ride our bikes, and trying to figure out something to fill in that hard cardio thing, it can actually set you back as well. So those are my three tips. Again, like, you know, try to maintain your routine as much as possible. And part of that is keeping your normal training times. If you need to outfit a home gym, you don't have a lot of money to do it. And even if you do have a lot of money to do it, then you should be considering strength bands and isometric training to that end. And then use this time to develop the movement skills behind the technical skills you use on the bike. And don't freak out about, you know, needing to make up for the cardio and stuff like that, because that'll just kind of, you know, backfire in the end. So those are the three tips. I hope that those help people. I'm definitely be coming out with a lot of stuff over the next few weeks to kind of help you know, people with these tips and things that'll help both now and after. I mean, you know, I helping riders is just what I do. So like this is just part of what, you know, what I started MTB Strength Training Systems for, and is really just, you know, an extension of what I do normally. It's just helping riders try to, you know, make the most out of their training and riding, and so I think it's as important as ever now, is important now as ever. And so hopefully I can, you know, do my part to help in some small way for some of you guys. But like I, you know, said at the beginning, doing what you can to keep up a good training routine is going to help in the short term and the long term. So hopefully these tips will help you do that. And so everybody, that's going to be it. So stay healthy, stay safe. You know, remember, do what you need to do to kind of help with the situation. We will get through this. I mean, as mountain bikers, we know this, right? Like, we have been through sketchy situations on the trail, and the worst thing that you can do is panic, right? Like the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy says, don't panic. It also says always bring a towel. So that's probably good advice as well. But, you know, we know, man, on the trail, if you panic, that's the worst thing you can do when things start getting sketchy, because you start getting tunnel vision, you start getting stiff, and then your odds of wrecking and things going horribly wrong are even higher. And so the best thing you can do is, you know, relax, control what you can control, and let the process play out. So we know this, right? Like, as mountain bikers, we know what to do. And so we're going to get through this together. If there's anything that I can do to help you out with this, please let me know. Hit me up at james@bikejames.com. I'm always happy to help. Like I said, stay safe, everybody, and I will talk to everybody next time.